This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. This is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sunder, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Let's talk about Uber. You may have heard in the news that they allegedly paid $100,000 to hackers to keep an information that they got breached and hacked with the old CEO during his time. Now, the thing is, though, for the new CEO, though, I feel really sorry for him, because it feels like he's just finding horror ever since he took this job at every turn that he decides to do. You could see that it's a good sign that they got rid of the old management, but it keeps coming back into surface because of, you know, we will get into that. But if you missed out the story, hackers stole 57 million of customer and drivers' database from Uber Technologies. And it's a massive breach that the company hid away all this information for more than a year. They included $100,000 payment to the attackers to keep it under the wraps. So they didn't want anyone to know, which by itself, it's criminal. You can't do this, because that's what happened with in the US with Equifax as well. They tried to, you know, cover it up and tried to sell shares, because these are public listed companies that you have, as an investor, you need to know if you have been breached and what's the status of the company. But paying a hacker after he's hacked you and say, "Can you please keep this quiet?" That's just a really big boo-boo here. Much so that I've actually deleted my Uber app because of just looking.
Oh, really? Because you're scared of your data being breached?
Well, it's been breached for sure already by now, if it's not Uber, some way or another. Mm. But the direction of where the company is moving forward, because the foundation that they started with has kind of made me feel that I don't trust you anymore. Despite the new management, I don't trust you anymore.
I think this is the thing. We're seeing so many of the tech companies getting into trouble because they're not being transparent.
Yeah.
So we had Twitter last week. We were talking about Twitter banning a lot of these kind of controversial figures from the extreme right wing of politics, but not saying why or how they were, you know, what they were actually doing to be banned.
Yeah.
Instead of just telling us what the procedures are, Facebook has at least tried to be a little bit more transparent.
Yeah.
And we can see Facebook owning up to some of its mistakes. The tech companies have got to understand that their relationship with us is one about trust. I mean, if someone like you is deleting apps, somebody who is, you know, heavily engaged in the tech world, and has that kind of knowledge about companies and the environment, how are ordinary consumers going to be feeling when all of this kind of information comes out? It really doesn't bode very well for the long-term prospects of a lot of these companies, not just Uber, but a lot of these tech companies.
Interestingly, Joe Sullivan, who's the outgoing chief of security officer, I've actually spoken to him when he was at Facebook, during his time at Facebook. And he's now going to be ousted as well, because he was spearheaded the response to the hack last year. And the thing is, this is how the hack went down. Two attackers, they access a private GitHub coding site by an Uber software engineers, and then they use the login credentials they obtained there to access the data stored on AWS, and then they handled the computing tasks for the company. From there, the hackers discovered an archive of rider and driver information, basically you and me, and later they emailed Uber asking for money, according to the company, and Uber said, "All right, cool, here's $100,000.
Of course.
No!
But the thing that they don't seem to get is that if you can't stop the hackers, there's no way you can hide the hack. You know, it just simply defies logic. If all of your expertise can't keep these people out of your system, then you're not going to be able to shut down the news about people getting into your system, because it's going to become widely known.
I'll be keeping a close eye on this, just to know what their valuation would be like in the next, you know, few weeks at least, because every turn this new CEO seems to take, it's just a horror show in the making. However, though, there's some positives that you've managed to dig out in all this negativity here.
Well, it's kind of positives and negatives. Ah. So the first one is kind of a negative, in that Uber is saying that it's planning to buy 24,000 autonomous Volvo SUVs, which obviously is showing that they really are going down this path.
Bye bye drivers,
because they're on record. They're very open about the fact, saying the most expensive thing about your ride is the driver. Mm. So that's probably not the best time for this news to come out. But as they are working on these systems, they've also got a bunch of people working on systems to prevent travel sickness in cars, because this is one of the things that they're seeing with that they imagine is going to happen with self-driving cars. People are going to spend more time in them, and they're going to be wanting to, they're going to be wanting to work on the go. And a lot of people get travel and motion sickness. And also, it maybe suggests that autonomous cars may not drive quite as smoothly as human ones. I don't know. We don't know yet. But it's interesting that they've got these people that are working on these plans that are going to use vibration and motion seats. They're going to use the way air flows onto people. And they're going to use mood lighting and screens to prevent passengers from feeling travel sick, so that they can actually be more comfortable in these vehicles for longer periods of time. It does show that, again, it's not great for the drivers, but it does show that they're putting this investment into consumers and into to riders, which, if they just did that with their PR machine as well, we'd have a lot more positive feeling about the company in general.
Now, I have a problem with Uber moving into this autonomous vehicle direction, because Uber is part of that we talked about, the gig economy itself. Helping people to sort of run their own business per se, in a larger context. So Uber came into Malaysia. A lot of drivers who were jobless beforehand, or probably not earning enough to sustain their life, jumped onto a platform like Uber or Grab and became drivers and started to earn a lot more money. Now, though, when their move is to get into these autonomous vehicles, you're eliminating the whole concept of we are here to empower or to grow.
That's never been Uber's stated role. Uber's stated role has always been to offer a solution for consumers, not to offer a solution for drivers. Drivers are the necessary evil that Uber has to stick with now. So that's why it's pioneered this gig economy model, because it doesn't want to be a direct employer. And part of not being a direct employer is the fact that they want to get rid of all of those drivers and go autonomous. So yes, there is going to be a hole in the economy, but that's a wider economic argument. It's not really something for Uber to address. It is something for the people who run the economies, across the world, to address people's falling income levels.
Because I know it's part of Grab's plan when they initially kickstart and they trying to get drivers in, is you can earn more income and to help the economy. And I'm sure Grab is also looking at autonomous vehicles in the near future and stuff. They've got a massive R&D center in Singapore. With that though, it kind of lies the question, like, what are you going to do? Are your mission is going to change then?
Sure. But I think Grab is a slightly different offering in that, it came out of the My Taxi app, so it was very much focused on taxi service. So what direction they'll go in, but yes, their point of origin is quite different from Uber's.
Now, let's talk about the GPS function on your phone. For some people,
yes, because that's the most exciting thing about your phone.
That is the most exciting thing about your phone. You can actually turn off and turn on your GPS on your phone, and you will want to do that if you just want to be anonymous in wherever you want to go, right?
Yeah, I mean, people who had the early iPhones routinely turned off the location services
battery,
because it drained your battery in seconds.
It drains your battery.
Yeah, any time you saw that little GPS symbol on the screen, you were like, throw the phone on the floor, turn it off.
Yeah, so normally, generally, people would turn it off when they're not using any apps that would require it, like Waze, Google Maps and all that, right? And a lot of people assume that once you turn it off, no company will be able to trace you, especially the operating system itself, because it's switched off from the root itself, which is the process, the operating machine itself, not an app. That is, you're not switching it from an app, you're switching it from the operating system. So apparently, Android, Google, it seems that according to Quartz, they've discovered that the cell tower addresses have been included even if you switch off the GPS function on your phone. Now, you may say, yeah, you know, cell tower addresses may not be as accurate as GPS itself, but if you do a triangulate location on, you know, the nearest towers, you can actually put it up to like a quarter mile radius of where the phone is.
You could narrow it down. Quite easily, yeah.
Because I remember, you know, hearing a podcast Serial in the first season itself, that's how they traced off where the phone of the, you know, the said person. Well, you use cell tower addresses. You can still be tracked.
And we shouldn't forget that Google got into trouble doing something similar with Wi-Fi addresses. They were logging open Wi-Fi addresses.
Open Wi-Fi. Yeah.
And I think one of the courts in the European Union gave them a big fine for doing that. Mm.
Yeah. Well, now it seems like they're going to be in for a big trouble again. They have said, though, that by the end of November, Android phones will no longer send cell tower location data to Google. At least that is part of the particular service which consumers cannot disable, apparently. So the GPS location turning off doesn't adjust anything to your cell tower. But now, as end of November, they say it will stop. They didn't say what they're using this information for. They said it was just something that, you know, it's just an observe for us to just observe where the data. They're not using it for any specific reasons. But I think it's just of letting the consumers know what power you have and what you don't.
Yes, for sure.
Because that itself, if I'm turning my GPS off, it means I want to be anonymous. But clearly, I am not anonymous.
No, and it also goes to what the purpose of Android is as well. Because, you know, when you look at Apple makes its own operating system for its own hardware. So consumers know exactly who to talk to when they find out about these, you know, these kind of privacy breaches. Android supplies the operating system to a lot of manufacturers. Yeah. Now, why does Android do that? Partly for licensing fee, but mainly because Google is data. About taking in data.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to bear that in mind. When you have an Android phone, you're largely taking part in a lot of social experiments on behalf of Alphabet. That's kind of the purpose of the operating system.
Well, Google says that they don't use the location data that they collect for its service, but they do allow advertisers to target consumers using location data. And it's obviously a commercial approach, which goes back to data.
Exactly. And it also comes back to how you define use. They're saying they're not using it, but they're allowing people to target you based
on
location.
We're not using it. They're using it.
Precisely. So you're giving them the opportunity to do that. So it also goes back to that, you know, there was that thing about Google right at the start, don't be evil.
Yeah.
And it really depends on what your definition of evil is. Yeah. And it seems that definition is getting looser and pushed kind of further and further away. But like you said, it is very important for people to understand their rights and to make noise, because if you tell these companies not to do these things, they can only respond by either telling you, you know, swearing at you in your face, in which case you switch to another system, another operating system, or they bow down to the pressure and they make the changes you want. Now, we've seen that happening over and over with Facebook this year.
Yeah.
It is worth making a noise and kicking up a fuss.
Of course. Anyways, we'll be right back with King of the Crowd up next, BFM 89.9.
Barcelona, Fiorentina, Manchester United, BFM 89.9.
And we're back, and it's time for King of the Crowd. Matt, what do we have? Something for holiday season, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I do these kind of air conditioning units reasonably often.
You like to keep cold.
I like to keep cold, but also because there is a kind of definite usage for Malaysia. We use a lot of air conditioning, and we don't necessarily use it very, very efficiently. Yeah. So when these kind of personal units come on the market and they're battery powered and they just kind of cool the space around you, it's worth highlighting them because, you know, it can lead to kind of better energy efficiency and, you know, just moving away from these big centralized kind of units. So this is the in and outdoor solar powered portable air conditioner. You can tell that it's a company from China because they haven't really thought through the English name.
It's
terribly
literally what
well.
It is. Yeah, yeah. It's an in and outdoor solar powered portable air conditioner.
It comes from a company called Coolator, so let's call it the Coolator. It's a very lightweight unit. It weighs I think about just under 2.5 kilos. If you buy a battery pack unit for it, it's a little bit heavier, and it's fairly well priced. If you just buy the unit on its own with an AC adapter, it's $200.
Oh wow!
Which is you know the unit itself comes with a handle and it's got little wheels on it, so you can you know if you're take it to the campsite or taking it down to the beach, you can wheel it down the road to the car, get a bit of cooling there, or just to take it into the office. You know, if you, it's kind of the millennials equivalent of the boombox. Instead of bringing a boombox with you, bring your own portable air conditioner.
Portable air conditioner, yeah.
Now, this thing should be available from June next year. Mm. Now, a lot of the air conditioning units that we've talked about on the past have taken a lot longer to come to market. They've found that especially things like keeping the refrigerants intact in shipping is quite difficult. So. Yeah. Don't necessarily expect to get this on time if you do invest. If you want the kind of big battery 6-hour version with a solar panel, that's another nice thing about it. It comes with a solar panel. You can take it camping or you can take it, you know, and bring a bit of cool air with you. And that kind of package runs at about $425, which is about 1800 ringgit, which is not too bad. You can also use that giant battery that comes with it to run everything else, your phones and your laptop, and it actually comes with power outlets on as well, because it's a big powerful unit. And there are things like, you know, lights built into the air conditioner as well. So if you do take it camping, you can use it as your tent light too.
It's so very well funded on Indiegogo.
It's very popular. I mean, a lot of these cooling products are simply because when you look at the kind of split air conditioners that most of us use in our offices and our homes, then, I mean, they're not remotely portable. Yeah, you know, it's 80 kilos for the condenser unit. And, you know, you can't move them anywhere. They're fully built in. And even a lot of the previous generation of portable units are still very big and very heavy. So this is using a kind of new generation of cooling technology. And yeah, it's worth exploring. This is the Coolator solar-powered air conditioning unit. Find it on Indiegogo.
Now, very quickly, we always talk about how companies are creating products that are completely unnecessary and they charge a ridiculous price. So I came across this product. It's called the Boy Labs. Well, it's from a company called Boy Labs, and the device is named Boy. What it does is basically it's an $800 water monitor that tracks basically how much of water goes into your house. This is one of those devices where you plug into the front outlet, the main outlet itself, and it does machine learning to learn about where the water goes into your house. Like, you know, does it go into, for example, like your sink, your washer, your toilet, the bath? And it does machine, because it understands how much of water it brings in when you flush the toilet or when you shower and you do stuff like that. You can check it via an app. So it says that it helps you to, you know, at least cut down 10% of wasteful leaks, because generally a lot of people don't know there's a leakage in their piping system, which I'm a bit surprised. How would you not know if there's a leakage? Because it's water. You would see it somewhere. And they say that it would actually bring down the cost of your water bill. But the thing is, though, it is $800 for a thing that just looks like a float.
Well, yeah, the thing that I have trouble with here, okay, water may be a lot more expensive
in
other countries.
In the US and stuff,
My monthly water bill is 6 ringgit.
Mine is slightly a bit more, about 9 to 10 ringgit.
Right. So when we're talking about $800, that's 3,200 ringgit, mm-hmm. A little bit more, 3,500. So how long, how many years would I have to run that to make a saving?
I think I would have been able to pay off my house and still not make...
Right, exactly. I mean, I can't even... my brain's not working well enough to figure out how many years I'd have to pay at 6 ringgit a month to get to that kind of price.
Now, the thing is, with smart devices for home are getting a lot more cheaper. There are those some brands who would tend to try to, you know, market things up by saying it's a machine learning algorithm process. Don't be fooled by it. If the smart home solutions are wide and plenty, don't fall for something like this if it's not within your budget. But there are many options available if you're looking for a smart water monitoring system.
Yeah,
there are plenty of those available.
And also in a lot of countries, the utility companies themselves install this kind of device.
Because
it also helps them
to know.
To know how electricity is being used and to get the best use for customers. Mm. So, it's like that $100 smart salt. No, not the juicer, the salt shaker.
Oh, yeah, why would you?
To track your salt usage. Just because it's smart doesn't mean you need it.
Yeah. Anyways, finally, Google. They've announced plans to derank a couple of Russian news agencies that are state-run. That includes Russia Today and also Sputnik. And this is to combat misinformation, fake news.
Yeah, fake news. I mean, this isn't really so much about the Sputnik and Russia Today as it is about Google finally kind of getting its act together and making steps to kind of make sure the information people are getting is real and true. Because that's one of the reasons that Google's search engine became the dominant search engine, because you knew when you typed something in that its algorithms brought you up information that was useful and correct and
trustworthy.
Trustworthy, yeah, exactly. So this is really about putting trust back into that relationship. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the story about Uber as well.
Uber,
you know, this is just coming full circle. I mean, I don't want to talk so much about whether Russia Today or Sputnik deserve to be delisted. But yes, it is good that Google has kind of finally recognized this issue and is taking concrete steps to put trust back into our relationship with them.
Well, it's good to see tech companies are doing something about this. I know Facebook are also working really hard to combat misinformation. We'll see. Anyways, GeekTunes, I have something this time around, Matt.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk this time.
And the sad thing is, though, I decided to pick a band that I can't pronounce the name. I can't actually mention the entire name of the band here. I'll just give you a short form. It's KMF.
Yeah, and I think the name was made the same way that IKEA makes the names for its products. Dogs in a Scrabble pit.
And this is a song called May God, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.